You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. I am your host, Tracy Ross. Kate Lochte has joined me in the studios this afternoon, along with Christopher Mitchell and a couple of students from Murray State's Department of Music production of Mozart's The Magic Flute. Welcome to Sounds Good today.
Thank you for having us.
Our students are Grace Lozon and Michael Martin, and I understand Grace is in both casts, and Michael, are you in one cast?
Yes.
Okay. Let's open with your director, Dr. Christopher Mitchell, telling us why this production is especially family-friendly.
Yes, this is an adaptation of Mozart's Magic Flute that we deliberately adapted. And in fact, we're taking the adaptation from Nashville Opera's Opera for Youth or Young Audiences adaptation that they toured in 2009 to Nashville area schools and all the way throughout Tennessee. So I had a friend down there who had created this adaptation, and he told me about it. And I went ahead and looked at it, and then we decided to rent that adaptation and also their touring set for this production. So it is specifically geared toward young audiences for families. The production is only 45 or 50 minutes long. We've taken out a lot of the slower and more serious moments of the opera and have included all the sort of fun highlight moments. And it still tells a really lovely story and includes all these all the beautiful Mozart moments without it being 3 hours long, which is sort of your typical length for an opera.
The shows are a double book this Saturday and Sunday, one at 2, the other at 6, both days.
Correct.
And they're in Performing Arts Hall, which is one of the most beautiful venues on campus, I think. Grace and Michael, I'd like you both to speak to your roles in the production.
Well, I am double cast as the First Lady and Pamina. The Queen of the Night has three lady attendants, and the First Lady is essentially next in line to become the Queen, so she's very boss lady, I'm in charge, you do what I tell you. And Pamina is the Queen's daughter, and she has been kidnapped by this supposedly evil demon, and she is rescued by a Prince Tamino and helped along the way by a character called Papageno. Pamina is the very quintessential ingenue, but she can stand up for herself.
I play Papageno in the Amadeus cast, and Papageno is a pretty outrageous character, very colorful, very light and fun, a little ignorant towards probably what's going on in real life, but a very, very fun character. And I also play Zarastro in the same cast, and as Grace said earlier, he's a little supposedly evil, but it turns out that he actually isn't in the story.
I understand that Zarastro has one of the very lowest notes to hit in the production. Is that true?
Yeah, he does. yeah, he does. We've also done some adaptation to the voice part as well for both casts. Yeah,
and actually, Zarastro's original arias are not in our production because we don't have a true basso profundo. So this adaptation doesn't have those low Zarastro arias, but Michael's featured moments are Papageno's arias, which are for lyric baritone, and they're some of the more famous tunes that people will recognize from the opera.
The big one is the Queen of the Night aria.
Correct. And ours is a little bit unusual as well, in the sense that this adaptation with the Queen was transposed from coloratura soprano range to mezzo soprano range. And we have two young, very, very fine mezzo-sopranos, Lauren Kopp-Palmer and Madeline Hart, that are double cast in that role. So they're still singing excerpts of that Queen of the Night arias, but they are transposed down. They'll still sound really high to the average ear, however.
Well, you can go on YouTube and listen to several performances of Queen of the Night, and it really is one of those moments when you see the wine glass
exactly.
splitting into a billion pieces.
Yes, exactly.
That kind of singing fireworks. What was the? I know that this production is family friendly and in English, but talk a little bit about the original opera. It was premiered in 1791, like three or four months before Mozart passed.
It was one of the one near the end of his life. It was also quite different than most of his other operas. It's actually technically called a Singspiel. Because it has dialogue. So a true opera, most of his operas had the spoken parts were sung, so in recitative style. But this was actually called a Singspiel because it's actually more of an operetta in a lot of ways. So there was sung in German and then spoken German, which was unusual. There's not, as far as I know, aside from Impresario, not any other of Mozart's operas that actually had written dialogue in them. So it's a little bit, it was definitely different, and it had all these, again, Masonic themes. It was pretty high art, I guess, for sure.
For sure. But basically, a magical sort of theme through it.
Yes, it's very, very fantasy-oriented. We talk about knights and princesses and dragons and all these types of things. In our production, those are actually originally in there as well. Tamino, the prince, gets chased by a serpent at the very beginning of the show and is saved by the three ladies who are, the servants of the Queen of the Night. So there's quite a bit of action, again, in the original and also in our adaptation.
But Grace, as Pamina, do you get into hot water with your mom in this one?
Oh, definitely. There's mother-daughter conflict. Am I allowed to give away? Well, people know the opera, but am I allowed to give a little bit of a spoiler, Dr.
Sure.
Mitchell? Okay. So we believe Zarathustra is this evil wizard that has kidnapped Pamina from her mother. It turns out her mother is planning to destroy his entire kingdom and bring darkness to the land, as she is the Queen of the Night. So I try to confront her about it. She essentially tells me, if you do not do what I tell you and help me bring down Zarathustra, you are no longer my daughter. I no longer acknowledge you in my life. So Pamina is really, really struggling with being loyal to her mother or doing the right thing. And that's a recurring theme through this opera, about being truthful and doing the right thing and being true to yourself.
Do you want to add anything about the opera from your perspective?
I think that's, again, what Grace was just saying. The big theme is Papageno is childlike in our production. And so Dr. Mitchell has really tried to hammer home to us that when we have these elements of telling the truth, you know, and not lying and doing the right thing, as Grace just said, that we really want to emphasize that because he's the childlike person and, you know, he's being taught these things through the show, through everyone else.
You know, we have neglected to offer you both the opportunity to say what you're studying, when you graduate, what you're going to do when you grow up, and who are your folks, and that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. I am a senior vocal music education major, and right now I'm currently doing applications for grad school. I'm going to go to grad school for performance, so it's a very busy time. Grace?
I'm from Owensboro, Kentucky. I'm the daughter of Dr. John and Kate Lozon, if you wanted to say parents. Sorry. Hi, Mom and Dad. I am a senior. I will graduate. Sorry, I'm a vocal performance major. I will graduate in 1 year, and I hope to go to graduate school for music therapy.
Wonderful. You know, we've also, I've completely blanked out on doing the business in terms of tickets.
Great. The tickets are going to be available 1 hour before each show. They're only at the door, cash and check only. We don't have any way to do credit cards. Unfortunately, we're low tech in the music department still. So it will be, again, in Performing Arts Hall, 2 and 6 p.m. on November 10th and 11th. Again, tickets open, or the box office opens 1 hour before, and the ticket prices are $5 for adults, $3 for children 12 and under. And then we have a family price, a maximum family price of $15. So if a family is bringing multiple children, we don't want them to get overly taxed financially, because we really want folks to bring their families out. The children being in the audience are a really key element of the production. So we're really pushing that hard to try to get folks to actually see an opera, first of all, to learn about opera and realize it's really not this intimidating elitist art form that sort of gets portrayed in the media oftentimes.
Well, that brings up the audience participation you mentioned before. What are you doing with that?
There's a few moments in there where there actually are spots for children to participate on stage, and they will be selected during the ticket purchasing process. We'll be sort of selecting out any young children that are interested in being on stage with the cast. And there are two different opportunities for that. So we'll be picking about five or six different children before the show begins. They'll be coached by our stage management as to what they need to do. It's very simple. It's anything that they, you know, nothing that they need to be have any specific skills to do. But if they're excited about the chance of throwing a little bit of a costume on and jumping up on stage and being part of the show for a few minutes, that's something they can seek out when they come and buy their tickets. They can say, oh, I want to be part of that. And so, again, it'll be a small select group. And then there's a few other places during the show where there's some sort of audience response moments, shall we say, where they can interact with the cast a bit as well.
It sounds like fun. And for our listeners who may not know a real easy way to get to Performing Arts Hall, you want to describe that as well?
Sure. It's in the old Fine Arts building on campus. So if you're at the corner of 15th and Olive at the main gates, and you head towards Waterfield Library, it's actually immediately across the pedestrian walkway there from Waterfield Library. Probably the best parking is in the faculty hall lot off of 16th Street, but there's also parking oftentimes behind Waterfield, and since we're on Saturday and Sunday, you can park freely without being ticketed for any reason.
So. There you go, and it's on the second floor. Mm-hmm. Once again, this is an adaptation of Mozart's The Magic Flute. Show times are 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, and it sounds like a perfect show for young hams.
Absolutely.
Is that about it?
Yes.
Parting shots, Grace and Michael?
Come see the show.
Come see the show. We want to see you. We love children.
I do love children.
Very good. Grace Lauzon and Michael Martin and Dr. Christopher Mitchell involved in this production. You ought to go see this weekend. Thanks.
Let's go to the Modern Mandolin Quartet. This is Overture to Mozart's The Magic Flute on Sounds Good. Lovely version of Mozart's The Magic Flute from the Modern Mandolin Quartet. You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. I am your host, Tracy Ross. Station manager Kate Lochte is back in the studio with me, and we want to talk about the WKMS Sounds Good Wreath Contest.
First ever wreath contest. Yeah, we're really happy that a gracious underwriter in Mayfield, Petals and Pots Flowers and Home Decor, has committed to cash prizes and gift certificates. Like we did with the cookie contest, we'll pick five finalists, and everyone will get a gift certificate from Petals and Pots. And then there will be a first place, second place, third place. First place is $150 cash prize. Second place, $100 cash prize. Third place, $50 cash prize. We think that's kind of cool because we're pretty sure that lots of you are, I guess that word crafty comes to mind. that everybody is grimacing over when we read about it when we're promoting this contest. Are you crafty? Well, I bet you are crafty. And so the wreaths must be handmade by the person who makes the entry. They must be ready to hang. They've got to have a hook on them or something so that they could be hanged on the wall immediately without a lot of figuring out. They should be original. They should be one-of-a-kind designs, and they should have some natural materials in it. First, we wanted to have it all natural, all indigenous materials to LBL, and I think Asia said, no glitter, was such a heartbreaking
disappointment. Are spouses of WKMS staff members eligible?
No.
Because my wife is quite the wreath maker. There's no irony in that statement at all.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, anyway, all you have to do is create a wreath and take it to Waterfield Library's circulation desk sometime between now and November 16th. November 16th. The judging will be November 17th. And all you have to do to get an entry form that you're going to have to fasten on the wreath. This is getting to sound complicated, but if you really think about it, it's not. When you take it in, you'll have this little form that you can get at WKMS.org. And it just says, fill this out and put it on the wreath. And it has your name, your email address, your mailing address, the title of your wreath, and the description of the materials used, and whether or not you'd let us donate it to Murray Callaway County Hospital. The winning wreaths will go there. As you know, the hospital has been going through some rocky financial times, and they don't have a lot of money to decorate with, and they're tickled to get these wreaths. And so we'd love you to donate, but you have the option not to. That's it. That's the wreath contest. Again, go to WKMS.org and look at the details, see the entry form, make a wreath, take it to Waterfield Library circulation desk before November 16th or on November 16th. And we had one question. May these be indoor wreaths and outdoor wreaths? And the answer is yes. May these be professional wreaths or amateur wreaths? Yes. And I think that does it. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you very much, Kate.